Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable edition of Cattlecast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Cattlecast Reader's Roundtable edition. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined around the mic by Mari Garza and Cheryl Lindemann. Hey, ladies.
Hello. Good morning.
It's National Poetry Month. We all kind of like poetry.
Yes, we do.
So that's kind of where we are today. But ranging. We have a lot of interesting titles that aren't straight poetry collections as well.
So, yeah.
Do you want to start us right off?
I will, yeah. This is a book, I don't know if our listeners can relate to this, but you have a TBR, to be read pile at home. Well, this is a book that...
Sorry, we will laugh.
Let's not even go there. This is a book that I had in my pile, and it just... I could never get to it at the right time, so I finally picked it up. It was the perfect time. There is a right time for a book. You know, it has to be just sort of fit, and sometimes you get in those stages where no book works, and yes. This was the one that I picked up, and it was perfect. Okay, so the book is called Emily Dickinson's Gardening Life by Marta McDowell, the plants and places that inspired the iconic poet. So this book is a combination of writing that goes through the seasons from... spring all the way through, and it's also filled with photographs and archival documents about Emily Dickinson's life. I am so impressed by this book for so many reasons. It's such a huge work of scholarship. I'm almost like blown away by how much work went into this book. But Marta McDowell not only has written this work, but she's written a book about the plants in the secret garden. She's also written about Beatrix Potter's gardening life and a few other authors as well. So this is sort of her specialty. She worked in Emily Dickinson Gardens. It was a gardener in residence at the Emily Dickinson Museum. And that's really where this book came from. And she had written an older book that was updated into this one. But it is so rich into the life of Emily Dickinson's, who again, we know her poetry. We know a lot of speculation about... you know, why she took to her room, took to her house. There's just all sorts of stories about her relationships and that sort of thing. But what this book pulls out was that she was a huge gardener. And that not only was she a big gardener, but her family was as well. And she actually studied botany in college. She had an herbarium. And she had we have these books. They're beautiful books. There's actually photographs from them. She pressed all sorts of berries and flowers and wrote the Latin names of them in. She had a greenhouse, kind of conservatory. And until her death, she incorporated, as you know if you read her poetry, nature and flowers into her poetry. But it was a huge part of her life and her family's life, including a love of trees and berries. And, of course, garden plants. She started seeds, and she was just... Gardening was as important as writing. It also has a photograph of her bedroom that's been restored at the museum. And in the very back, there's this extensive plant list of all the plants. They've actually recreated the gardens as they should have been. You know, they actually had been... The estate had been purchased by other people who had sort of destroyed the property. They brought it back. And there's this huge plant list of the plants and the growing conditions in the garden. And of course, peppered through the book is a lot of Emily Dickinson poetry as well. So I just love this book, Emily Dickinson's Gardening Life, and I encourage you to check it out if you have an interest in gardening, literary figures, Emily Dickinson in general. Just a beautiful book.
It sort of naturally pulls right into, I do actually have collections of poetry, after what I said at the beginning. My first book is Far Company by Cindy Hunter Morgan. She has been an assistant professor at MSU and involved in poetry and writing workshops around the state. So this is a collection that's very outdoor place related. It's a little bit of everything, but the outdoors is so much a part of it. But it also includes a lot of sort of poems in conversation with her heroes and influences, which include Emily Dickinson, a lot of W.S. Merwin. So it's sort of poems in response to people that have affected her, James Wright, Walt Whitman. But it's sort of, you get a very strong sense of her poetic lineage, but also her very here and now explorations of the outdoors, putting Skin So Soft on a horse because she was told it was help keep the flies away. Different bits of, you know, we bought Avon, that particular poem sort of like, we bought Avon for the horse, you know, is how it starts.
That was a thing, especially in the 80s.
Yes, exactly.
It. We did
yes.
that too.
Yeah. I kind of thought that you might have insight into
Skin
that.
So Soft.
But it's, you know, it's her first experience shooting a gun. It's her first experiences just being out with rocks, with water. It's just an interesting look. You know, I don't know that it's all Michigan, but it feels it enough.
Yeah.
So that's, it's just an interesting collection, and I think people should take a look at. It's, like I said, it does give her, you have an idea of her influences in sort of those conversations with poets, but it's all very distinctly her.
All right. Well, I've got two children's books that are haiku-focused. The first one is Trees, Haiku from Roots to Leaves by Sally M. Walker. This is a collection of short haiku poems, and if you'll allow me to remind you, in case someone doesn't know, a haiku poem is basically a very short poem, three lines, five syllables in the first line, seven syllables in the second line, and five syllables in the third line. I learned this in fourth grade. Shout out to Mrs. McCabe from Holy Redeemer way back in the day. She was, actually she was a substitute teacher, but somehow she was in our classroom for a long time. But I'll never forget, you know, my first experience with haiku. It was
my first
really,
writing
really
contest, no, second writing contest submission when I was a kid in fourth grade,
yes.
I believe, fourth or fifth, was all haiku.
Yeah, I was just talking to my niece about haiku, and because she's, it is April, it is Poetry Month, so she's been studying poetry in school. And anyway, back to this title. This is a really great collection of haiku poems that kind of goes through the seasons, but specifically how it relates to trees and the stage of the tree life cycle. And I want to mention that Sally Walker actually has, this is a, kind of like her third or companion book to Earth Verse Haiku from the Ground Up, which I've also read, and Out of This World Star-Studded Haiku. So she's kind of got this STEM focus in this collection of haiku poetry books. But it's just a really, really sweet, sweet book. You know, ginkgo biloba, hungry mouth chomp, chewy greens, dinosaur salad. And then the next one, seeds crack, a seed hull splits, a thin root tip emerges and grabs hold of life. Really, really nice. I mean, it can be very simple, you know, when you're, you know, examining the shade, you know, what it does for the tree. Or there's was one section where it was talking about the xylem tubes, which I was vaguely familiar with, but like how water will go up to get to the leaves of trees. Really nice collection of haiku poems for children. It does provide, you know, kind of a unique way, I think, in introducing this topic of, you know, what are the roots and the leaves and how do they work with the tree? You know, what is it that the elements provide for the tree? The other book I want to mention, I don't talk about early literacy very much in this podcast, but this book is called Peekaboo Haiku, A Lift the Flap Book, and this is by Dana Smith, illustrated by Tegan White. Oh my goodness, it is so adorable. If you have a baby, a toddler, do you have any Lift the Flap books? If you don't, I want to encourage you to come to the library, check them out. This is one such book. One of the spring poems that I really liked was Old Pail in Meadow. Mama Weave's confetti nest celebrates with song. And then there's a little flap that you come down. Peekaboo, bird. So all of the flaps are have a peekaboo inside. And of course, peekaboo is, you know, something we use a lot with little children, little small children. But the reason that I want to mention Lift the Flap is that, you know, as a child is growing, getting ready to get to that grade kindergarten or grade one, I mean, they are really going to need dexterity in their fingers to learn how to write, to learn how to turn pages. It's part of, you know, the schooling process. So little babies, when they're, you know, scribbling or when they're grabbing clay or lifting the flap, they are working those muscles in the fingers. So this last one I'm going to end with is Cherry Blossoms Fall, Polka Dotted Friend Dances on Rosy Petals. And, of course, I like this one because of cherry blossom time in certain parts of the country, right? Peekaboo, Ladybug. So that's all I've got.
What an adorable book.
It is. In fact, I liked it so much I ordered it for a friend who, their baby is still an infant, but she'll grow into it.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we live in such an exciting time for kids' books. Yeah. I'm always in awe, comparing it even to my childhood, to see what we can expose babies to haiku right now.
Yes.
I mean, this is like the...
I had to wait till fourth grade, but
yeah, the things that you can do for vocab and just concept building, and like you said, dexterity. These books are just so exciting. I mean, I'm really... I've been a librarian for about 25 years, and it's. I think the books are getting better and better and better.
Totally
even
agree.
From when I started.
Yeah.
Kind of brings me to something I wanted to bring up in this April podcast. We actually have a pretty exciting list coming out towards the end of the month. It is a 25th anniversary list, as we're celebrating 25 years of Capital Area District Libraries this year. And it's called 25 Years, Thousands of Stories, and it does not contain thousands of stories. That's just a reference to all of the stories that have been checked out during that time through our libraries. But what it is a guide that goes through five topic areas: science, technology, pop culture, sports, and in the news, and gives some books that really stood out to us as representing those areas. And it's pretty subjective. You may have picked different books even when you see the guide. You'd say, oh, yeah, or you might
or
say,
different topics.
Oh, right, or I forgot about that. Oh, my gosh, wow. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be coming out. Look for that. It'll be an exciting exciting piece, we hope, and something that you might find some books to read from. And the book that I have today, I always like to think about, you know, how does a book come to you? Well, we've talked about Ilya Kaminsky, the poet, Ukrainian poet, on this podcast before, and I follow him on social media. And he posted one day about the passing of a poet who had been a mentor to him and posted one of her poems. And her name is Linda Paston, and I just passingly heard of her. In fact, I'd ordered her books for the library, but I don't remember everything I order. And he had written this tribute. Well, then I went and read the poem that he posted, and then more and more tributes. All the poets I could think of were writing about how she had influenced them. And Linda Paston was considered the poet laureate of Maryland. Some of her poems were National Book Award finalists. And the collection that I read was called Carnival Evening, New and Selected Poems from 1968 to 1998, when Cattle formed. That was kind of interesting. And these poems are beautiful. We use that word a lot, but so many books are beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. And especially poetry. But there's also a tone of melancholy kind of through all of it. And some of the themes are aging. Parenting features very heavily her Jewish heritage, including the experiences of her ancestors going back to Russia. And then mortality is a very strong theme, and the loss of her parents, which is not in the early poems but happens in the later poems, and the loss of family members, and that sort of fragility and beauty, that paradox in life. And the poem that Ilya Kaminsky posted, it was called Something About the Trees, and I encourage you to pick up this collection and read it, but this is how it starts out. I remember what my father told me. There is an age when you are most yourself. He was just past 50 then. Was it something about the trees that made him speak? And at the end, when will I be most myself? I remember what my father told me. In my sleep, it's never winter. He was just past 50 then. And it's an extremely moving poem in between. My colleagues here can probably see this book. I have about 50 dog-eared little post-it notes in it because these poems were just so moving and just hit me at a really good part in part of my life. But the collection goes from a younger age to an older age. She did pass away at 90. So you can find poems that really hit a lot of aspects of the life cycle, or you know, where readers are experiencing in their own lives. So Linda Paston, Carnival Evening.
Alrighty. So my next collection is Alive at the End of the World by Saeed Jones. I believe I talked about him before. His probably breakthrough moment was his memoir, but he had, which was how we fight for our lives. But he, his one of his earlier collection, Prelude to Bruges, was nominated for a number of awards, and so he's very, he's just a very noted poet. This current collection is very of the now, and very, it's, I would describe it as angrier, largely because of where we are in the now. It's, it tackles grief and anger, both personal and for the community. He is, you know, he's a Black gay man. He is a poet. He uses that to express, he's still sort of having conversations and writing about the loss of his mother. He's looking around the world pre and during pandemic and seeing the social injustice going, I mean, that isn't going away. But he's also looking at the tremendous losses of pop culture icons in this period as well. So, I mean, there's some deeply moving and really interesting, quirky, there's an element of side eye that I really appreciate in his writing as well. And his is fabulous if you ever see him. Also, he has a dog named Caesar. Caesar is a master of side eye as well. But there are things that there's, there are notes to and about Whitney Houston. There's notes about Little Richard, who's, you know, people who, in the case of Little Richard, you know, people who came to prominence, but whose work was well and truly stolen and used other ways. Odes to Cicely Tyson. But it's also looking at the gun violence, looking at racism. It's now, it's very interesting, it's very engrossing. There are, it's just one of those things, I just take a look. His writing is beautiful and really makes you think.
Yeah. Wow, that sounds interesting. Huh. My next book is Remember by Joy Harjo. I feel like I really need to thank Cheryl Lindemann for introducing me to Joy Harjo many, many years ago when I worked at the Mason Library. Joy is an amazing, amazing writer, poet, indigenous storyteller, just really, really interesting person about, you know, related to how she views our world and particular nature. So this is a picture book that is illustrated by Caldecott medalist Kayla Good. And it's a book that's based on the Remember poem, which is from 1983, long ago. I think it was, I've forgotten what edition of her work it was from. She had some horses, maybe, I think. But if you are not familiar with the poem, I do encourage you to get online and take a listen. I was able to look at, listen to different versions of Joy reciting the poem or telling the poem online last night. It was just beautiful. Remember sundown and the giving away tonight. Remember your birth, how your mother struggled to give you form and breath. You are evidence of her life and her mother's and hers. Remember your father. He is your life also. It's just a small portion from this poem. This is an adaptation, so you will find that it's not the, you know, perfect representation of the original poem. But it is just beautiful as far as the language. And then the illustrations. You know, Michaela Goad is just really amazing in how she displays her Tlingit culture. So many illustrations that show like little pockets of, there's so much depth, I guess, to the little things that are illustrated up in the corner, and you can tell that there's more to where she's getting that from. There's this spread with these robes that's just amazing. And there's more to it that I didn't fully understand, but she gives a little bit of of a shout out to the community that she received the inspiration for that spread of the robes. And I will say that if you are not familiar with Joy Harjo's work, this is a really great introduction to it. I find that a lot of poems now are being turned into picture books. And, you know, bringing in a really great illustrator really brings a different life to these historic poems.
That looks beautiful. It's on my list, and I haven't gotten a chance to see it yet. All right. So I'm very excited. How wonderful. My last book is a poetry collection called Magnolia, and it's by Nina Minya Paulus. And Nina grew up in Aotearoa, which is the indigenous term for New Zealand, and she has a mixed heritage. She's half Chinese, and she grew up in New Zealand, but spent a lot of time in Malaysia, and then also studied Chinese in Shanghai, and then now lives in London. So I've talked about her before because I talked about her essay collection called Small Bodies of Water, which I also loved. And this is an author who I am like, I will read everything she writes now. She's got me. I'm hooked. She's a younger writer. She's a Gen Z author. And she writes about similar themes in this poetry collection as in her essay, which really at the core is about what is home. You know, what is home when your ancestors had to flee their home? You know, they came to New Zealand from China, but they maybe wouldn't have wanted to necessarily. But then New Zealand is home. But then also Malaysia's home after spending time there. And then when she goes back to China, she feels that pull of home. But then she also has Chinese shopkeepers ask her, what are you? You kind of look Chinese, but kind of not, you know, and she gets that too. And so it's sort of that like, who am I? What is my identity? And that longing for all these pieces of home. And she's pointed out in the essay collection and in this book the opposite seasons in London and New Zealand, and that comes through too. So it's sort of like that disorientation, but then her orientation is in her memories, the language that she's learning and sort of reclaiming the Chinese characters and trying to understand this extremely complex language. But she looks at things like pop culture, like Mulan. And she's like, huh, wow, really? You know, like really looking at that with a critical eye, but sort of wanting to watch it anyway. There's tons of food, lots of beautiful, like blooming tofu flowers, which sounds really amazing. The Shanghai sky in this book and the other book, because of really, probably because of pollution, is this incredible, bright, colorful sunset with these vivid, vivid colors. And I feel like the Shanghai sky is like a character in both of these books. It's so powerful.
Interesting.
Yeah, so yeah. That's what she does with poetry. She just brings these things out. Young love, a failed romance kind of pulls through the collection. But memories of the grandparents and her parents, you know, spring onion pancakes, you know, there's just so much richness in this book. So I highly recommend this and her essay collection, Magnolia, poems by Nina Minya Paulus.
Okay. Right. That makes me think of something. I'll have to mention it later on another podcast because I think I'm going to relate back to this with something I'm going to talk about probably next month. But the book that I decided to do instead today is Above Ground by Clint Smith. Many of you may be aware of Clint Smith from his book, How the Word Was Passed, or Word Is Passed, which was all over all the lists at the end of the 2021. He's a former high school teacher. He's an educator. He's a scholar. He's contributed to The New Yorker. But he's also a poet. And I forget that with everything else that he has done and has been very passionate about. But he just released a book of poetry called Above Ground. I got it very quickly, and it totally changed my plan for this podcast because I decided I did really want to get it in. But this one is life in opposition. Starts with sort of waiting on information, waiting, first heartbeat, child coming, danger to child, pre-birth, but also everything that's going on in the world. And it's I mean, there's a poem about, it's one of those horrible ideas of if they had taken the advice of the medical person they talked to, they may have lost their first child. But she, but his wife was demanding and said, no, I really need you to do, went to a different person and said, I really need you to do this test. And that they catch something that basically, I mean, the child might not have survived. It's what, so it's, you know, Black healthcare. It's parenting toddlers in the time of Zoom, which, and that's the, like, one of the funniest poems I have ever read. It's the, you know, it's the going off in circles. No, don't touch that. Where did they go? You know, no, I'm sorry. I didn't realize I wasn't muted. Those types of moments. It's the pandemic. It's gun violence. It's, there's a little bit of everything in there. It's looking into the politics. It's, but it's also these beautiful kids and being a father and wanting to protect them. So it's just one of those, again, this is one that kind of felt now maybe a little more timeless, less pop culture than Cy Jones's book, but it's still very, very appropriate to now and very, you know, there's no question this is a loving father who's just trying to figure out how to make this all work and protect his kids and the future in what ways he can.
Yeah. So we're all in sync today on this podcast because you all brought three books that I already had on my old list.
Yes,
yeah.
There's that TBR again. Yeah. Yep.
And I read No Dig just recently, the adult version. So
right,
yeah.
Right.
We are all like very in sync. Sometimes that happens. This sounds like an amazing collection.
Yep.
Definitely. Wow.
And I wasn't really aware he was a poet either, to be honest. But yeah.
Well, that's
I thought
funny
more of a history author.
I absolutely. There is a book that I use quite a bit in other things. The Fire This Time. It was a set of collection of essays and poetry that Jessamyn Ward edited, and I'd forgotten he was in there too.
Okay.
And it's sort of, but it's,
yeah.
But I mean, a lot's been overshadowed by this, by how the word has passed.
Yes, right.
But he's, you know, he's been very, you know, he is a prominent contributor in a number of different, on a number of different topics too. I mean, he writes sports articles as well. So it's sort of like. He's a soccer fan and does sports too. So it's, he's, you know, he's just one of those people who has a lot of interest in.
Oh. Okay. Well, I've got one last book.
Okay.
I have a biography, sort of. Hope is an Arrow, the story of Lebanese American poet Khalil Gibran. Wow. This is a really nice, beautiful biography. It's a picture book biography, so it's got just a really nice, colorful collage style display of illustrations and pages. So Khalil, actually Gibran, came to the United States from Bashara, which is now Lebanon, back in the late 1800s. He was an immigrant who was, you know, came here with his family because of, you know, violence, war going on in that part of the world. And he unfortunately had to drop part of his name. That was just something that was done back then. Maybe some immigrants still experience that where they have pressure to, you know, change their name in some way. So instead of Gibran, Khalil Gibran, who's just Khalil Gibran, which is, you know, kind of how most of us know him, he's most famous for The Prophet, which I spent some time last night listening to, which I highly recommend. It's, you know, we've got several different versions of it through Hoopla. You can listen to it in an hour or so. Oh, wow. Amazing. Amazing. It is a picture book biography that kind of, you know, gives the perspective, you know, kind of highlights of his life. He was a very introverted boy. He would spend time in the woods. Just, you know, pondering. And what I really like about the biography is that there are bits of the prophet inside of the poetry or the essay work in this work. You know, shall my heart become a tree heavy laden with fruit? that may gather and give unto them. I mean, he was just this person who was looking at nature all around, and he came from a Maronite background, which is kind of like an Eastern version of Catholicism from that part of the world. And like I said, he came with his family, but at one point his mother kind of didn't want him to lose his culture, so they sent him back to Lebanon to learn Arabic and to write. And when he came back, he was inspired, and he was always a very artistic person. And with his writing, you know, through the help of many benefactors, he published this book in 1923 called The Prophet. So it's actually by Corey McCarthy. This is an author. I did not make the connection until I, you know, started looking up some things. Corey is, they have published a lot of young adult and children's fiction books. So I was like, and Corey is Lebanese American, which again, I also did not know. So I hope you'll check out some of the other titles that they have listed here. That's it.
Excellent.
All right. A lot of really great books. Yeah. And yes, a long TBR editions. So thank you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.